the grace of being stuck. My introduction to Vipassana was sudden and unforgettable. In my late 30s, single and supporting two teenage sons, daily life itself was a challenge. But when a friend invited me to come meet several New Englanders just returned from Buddhist studies in Asia, I said yes and signed up for a 10-day silent retreat. The year was 1977. The unlikely place was a Boy Scout camp in Central Texas. The New Englanders were Sharon, Jack, and Joseph. From today's perspective, I see my incredible good fortune, a life gift of the highest order. But what did I know? What do we ever know ahead of time? Having had only a brief and rather tepid experience with transcendental meditation, I was hardly prepared for what was about to unfold. By the second day of the retreat, I was already exhausted from sitting very still, straddling a rolled-up cotton bedding sleeping bag for an hour at a time, struggling to follow the quiet, patient instructions to keep attention focused on the breath. Walking was little better with its close-in focus on tiny body movements. This practice, the forms alternating from 5 in the morning until 9 at night, was the most demanding thing I had ever done. I had no idea the body could produce such a variety of aches, tensions, urges to move, and general resistances. And how could it be that I had never noticed the mind's incessant sorties into fantasy and story, stupid little ditties and songs? Around the third day, I was convinced I had made a mistake. All around me were people who looked peaceful and happy. In contrast, I was in utter misery. By now, the mind was screaming out doubts, judgments, telling me I was on a fool's journey, not to mention that I was deserting my family's upbringing and traditions. I simply couldn't do this, I thought. It was just too hard. To my great good fortune, someone else had driven, so I couldn't go home. And mercifully, the fourth and fifth days arrived. The mind began to quiet, the body settled in. The instructions, always precise and clear, seemed a bit easier to follow. Almost imperceptibly, the body softened. The mind and heart began to open. By the end of the 10 days, an internal door had creaked on its tight hinges and opened, just a crack, but enough to offer a glimpse, a wholly new view of the world, of reality itself. I knew that life would never be quite the same again. Coming back home was rather shattering, but that's another story. Gradually, I found footing, and for the next 6 or 8 years, attended a 10-day or 2-week retreat annually. At home in Dallas, there were several folks who had begun the same practice and were also lonely for Sangha. We sat weekly in someone's home, relying on one another for an encouraging presence, a mental boost to continue the sitting practice. And then, as is so often the case, life intervened in such a way that my practice lapsed for long periods. Too little support, no easy access to a teacher, and very deep conditioning in favor of life as usual. For long periods of time, I felt stuck, and so increasingly postponed practicing Vipassana. But I could never completely forget the experience of intense, extended practice in the presence of teachers who had been there before me and whose deep wisdom helped show the way. I suspect, in fact, I know from what many of you tell me that you also have experienced stuckness in your meditation practice. Maybe you're there right now, today. So it can be useful to explore just what it is to feel stuck and how we can best respond. We might begin by looking at how we know when we're stuck. Often this can show up as a sort of restlessness, wanting to get up off the cushion before we intended to do so. Or it can come in the form of doubt about the usefulness of practice or doubt about our ability to continue. You may recognize these as two of the five hindrances that Buddha told us would arise. Indeed, we might ask ourselves, what did I expect? Stuckness can take the form of circumstances. I recall in the early years of practice being at Insight Meditation Society and hearing others speak of registering for the 3-month retreat. At that time, my life circumstances did not allow such a long absence from home. I remember feeling very left out, especially being afraid that others were going to get there ahead of me. I felt stuck. Regardless of the way in which it arises, more often than not, we view being stuck as something that wasn't supposed to happen. An obstacle, an inconvenience, an irritation. As soon as we see that we're stuck, we want to get unstuck. Even as I was preparing this talk, I was tempted to list various helpful ways for you, for us, to get unstuck. Maybe this is a desire to be useful. Maybe it's just a deep-seated inclination to minimize the unpleasant, otherwise known as aversion. But something as ordinary as labeling the stuck experience unpleasant or neutral may clarify what is going on and how we're responding. We may also want to notice whether there is a comparing or judging mind telling us that we shouldn't be feeling stuck, or that we shouldn't be resisting. The wiles of the mind are endless. There's often a story associated with our sense of being stuck. Jack Kornfield advises us to discover what is asking for acceptance. These are his words. We must inquire what aspect of this repeated pattern is asking for acceptance and compassion, and ask ourselves, can I touch with love whatever I have closed my heart to? This doesn't mean solving it or figuring it out. It is simply asking, what wants acceptance? In difficult patterns of thought, emotion, or sensation, we must open to feel their full energy in our body, heart, and mind, however strongly they show themselves. This includes opening to our reactions to this experience as well, noticing the fear, aversion, or contraction that arises, and then accepting it all. Only then can it release. Ajahn Suchito, the abbot of Chithurst Buddhist Monastery in southern England, which is in the Thai forest tradition of Ajahn Chah, wrote a rich and most helpful article for the fall issue a couple of years ago in Buddha Dharma called Feeling Stuck? Good. With great wisdom and clarity, he describes the essential issue in stuckness as our deep self-orientation, viewing everything from the standpoint of I. So what would it take to actually experience stuckness differently? First, we can bring attention to stuckness in the body. Where and how does it show up? Even more to the point, how do you find that you receive it? Can you open to stuckness, invite it in? Receiving stuckness with hospitality allows it to become grist for the mill of awakening. As Chogyam Trungpa said, the shortest way from A to B is to be completely present at A. So suppose for just a minute that we consider being stuck as good. If not sought after, then at least workable. There's nothing wrong with feeling stuck. It's just one more moment to use to awaken. So, are you ready for this? Try considering stuckness as grace. I want to close with a poem by Mark Coleman. He says, "Your only duty is to try not to run from here, from this. Even if the hole of loss burns deep into your soft belly. Even if on waking you feel the dread of walking into the day raw, stripped bare, and it feels like the mind will finally pierce those empty places that lay open and exposed. At times in this life, you don't have a choice but to pick up where you left off, to make a cup of tea, to sit quietly in the garden of your creation and take in the day, to turn towards exactly where you are. You could always pretend, try putting on a face other than your own, or try avoiding the whole damn thing. But that's a game that's never worked and only burns a deeper hole inside the pocket of longing and makes the shell you've chosen to live in even more empty. But when you surrender to embrace your loneliness, the starved parts of your being, and you touch the void that you've spent a lifetime running from with delicate hands of love, the way the evening fog envelops the solitary tree without flinching, pressing into every loving, gnarled crevice, every twisted branch, even the forgotten needles that fall on the ground. This is the first step that begins the slow journey of completeness, keeps inviting you deeper into the roots of yourself, claiming your place that has been waiting, that is always right here."